Diablo 4 ist im Juni endlich erschienen und hat sich hervorragend verkauft. Hin und wieder liest man aber auch Kritik auf Reddit und Co. Und das ist doch der perfekte Moment, um sich zu fragen, wie läuft es eigentlich mit dem Spiel und was plant Blizzard für die Zukunft, unter anderem für die gerade angekündigte Season 2. Darüber darf ich hier auf der Gamescom 2023 in Köln mit hochrangigem Besuch sprechen. Ich darf begrüßen Rod Ferguson, den General Manager für die Marke Diablo bei Blizzard. Rod, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Und Chris Wilson ist noch mit dabei. Er arbeitet als Associate Production Director an Diablo 4. Chris, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
Rod, how should players approach Diablo 4? What kind of expectations should they have getting into the game?
New players should, like, Diablo is all about sort of this ultimate power fantasy. You know, it's this idea of going in and just wanting to grow in power. Like, what I love about Diablo stories is that they're not a chosen one story. It's not you're the hero from the very beginning. You know, you start off as a wanderer in the woods, and you go from that to be the person who ultimately, you know, tries to fight off evil in Sanctuary. So, you know, one of the big things for us on Diablo was trying to make a game that was approachable by all players. You know, people who are core, who played for the last 26 years, and people who've never played before. So that idea of, like, we put a lot of work on the onboarding and the prologue, the fact that you can play on console or you can play with controller on PC, just and all of our accessibility options. Like, we tried to make it a smooth on-ramp. But one of the things I try to, when I talk to new players, it's very easy to get distracted in Diablo 4. There's so much going on, like all the side quests and local events and everything. But if you can get through that story, like the story, it's our best story we've ever had in a Diablo game, and it's a great campaign. And all the side quests and all those events will be waiting for you when you get to the other side of the story. So try to stay on the main quest. You can mix and match which act you play in whatever order you want to play it in. But if you can get through that first campaign and then let that open world open up for you, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it actually is. It is a great campaign, but with a bit of an open ending. Can we expect some, like, big story expansions, like we saw for Diablo 2 with Lord of Destruction, for Diablo 4, maybe one day?
Maybe one day.
In the far future?
Yeah, having an ending. I mean, it has closure. Like, we want a story that has closure, but that does create options for the future. And so, yeah, we're excited, and we're going to be supporting Diablo 4 for years to come with all of our live seasons, and which are all free for players. And then, of course, we'll have expansions in the future, and we already have some in development right now.
Okay, sounds exciting. How do you see Diablo 4 going right now? And how many of the 12 million players you announced at O&L here at Gamescom are still playing?
Don't talk specific numbers on any given day, but because, you know, one of the things is that there's always sort of a cyclic nature to it. But it's very exciting to see all the players going in and playing and getting sort of caught up in the season. Like, the seasons are really cool for us because one of that notion of the reset where you go and say, okay, we're going to start a reset with each season, means that you're not being left behind. That if you decide to play 4 months after it launched, everybody's level 100, you're level one, and it's hard to catch up, or you don't feel like you're at the same place with other people. And so the seasons allow everybody to have a starting area at the same, everybody starts at level one and off you go. And that doesn't mean you can't play the Eternal Realm, which is our other way you can play your permanent, you know, your character that you started at launch, and you can keep playing that character too, you know. So, but the seasons allow that ability to start fresh with everybody, but also it gives us a place to have new and fun ways of playing. Like season one, the season of the Malignant, has these cool hearts that you can get you extra powerful. And now in season two, in the season of Blood, you get all these vampiric powers and you become like a daywalker where you're a vampire hunting vampires. And so all those seasons add a little, I call them seasoning for Diablo 4. I know. It's early and I'm a dad, so. But like the notion of having that, a little bit of a twist on the gameplay, and the fact that the season's allowed to keep, you know, having those twists along the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about season two, Chris. You just announced it here at BlizzCon. At BlizzCon, I'm saying, at Gamescom. Sorry, confusing the shows. What is your design approach when designing, or your design philosophy when designing seasonal content, especially if it comes to endgame content you're going to add in the future?
Yeah, I mean, so for seasons, what as Rod was mentioning, it's a really exciting moment for us to really try new things. And, you know, we always want to be able to tell new stories within Sanctuary. So, you know, for seasons, we oftentimes try to look at having new quest lines, take people on new adventures, create new power fantasies, new ways to, like, build your character and explore, like, the power of, you know, for season two, like, using vampiric powers as a barbarian or as a necromancer, and what does that mean, and being able to explore that. So I think it's it offers a lot of, like, really exciting opportunities to come back for people who have been playing from the beginning, or if you're a new player to come in for the first time and try different ways to explore your character build. Mm-hmm. In terms of philosophy, again, it's just there's no set template. You know, each season we really just want to look at how can we drive engagement, bring new ways to delight our players, and surprise them in ways that maybe they didn't expect.
Yeah, our design director, Joe Shelley, talks about like the promise that you have with a Diablo game is that you as a player are going to get to hack and slash your way through hordes of demons. And so that's always been central to whatever we do. We want to make sure that we're empowering the ability for that player to go in and have that fantasy of just mowing down, you know, lots and lots of demons. And that's why you saw in season one, we've been turning up the monster density, you know, as we go. Exactly. And so it helps fulfill that fantasy. Like, I'm super powerful and I can take on lots of enemies.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. And then just to your question around in-game. So for season two, for instance, we're always looking at ways to like layer on top of what's there, right?
Okay.
Continue to build to on the foundation that we have. So we are going to be adding 5 new boss encounters mm-hmm. with season 2.
Cool.
And what's really cool about these is that it's a way to farm some of the unique and uber unique items mm-hmm. in the game. So for people that are really looking for a specific unique to power up or to like, create the build that they're going after, going after these 5 unique bosses is a way to achieve that.
Ah, so there's targeted farming now.
Precisely.
Like a little bit like in an MMO when I have loot tables for specific bosses. So how exactly is this going to work?
Yeah, so I mean, to your point about loot tables, we're going to be increasing the drop rate for some of these uniques and mm-hmm. the uber uniques on these 5 bosses. So again, it is a way for people that are interested in that to kind of target farm those boss encounters.
And that is a very good idea.
And it's in the Eternal Realm and the Season Realm. So
yes.
That's something we're applying to both sides. So you can play it. If you're playing in the Eternal Realm because you have the character that you want to keep going in that space, you can do the 5 additional bosses as well.
That is excellent because I miss my sorcerer from the Eternal Realm. I love my necromancer,
right.
My seasonal necromancer, but I'm missing my sorcerer.
Right.
So that would have been my next question, actually, how you plan to keep the Eternal Realm fresh as well as I will return to characters that have gone there. So this is one.
Yeah, I think to that point, a lot of mm-hmm. the quality of life improvements, a lot of these changes to the end game, mm-hmm. we want to like not only like make these changes for the seasonal realm, but also for the Eternal Realm as well.
Right, that's excellent. Actually, you talked about the vampiric powers. I know you can't go into specifics yet, but are there going to be any changes to the skill system as such in the game?
So as we get closer to the season 2 launch, mm-hmm. I think in October, early October, we'll be talking more specifically around like how the powers are going to function and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So. Are there any, apart from the vampiric powers, are there any plans for changes to the skill system for the near future?
Nothing that we can talk about at this point, but I mean, the game is always going to be evolving. That's the great part of the live service. So I think over time, as we get feedback from players, as we look at data analytics and telemetry, we're always looking at like what things are working well, what things we can improve, mm-hmm. and over time we're going to continue to refine the game. It's going to evolve.
Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to call the season some kind of mini betas? Testing changes for the future?
No, I think the way that we like to think about it is that things that what we do in the season are meant to be little fun moments that you can do for 3 months. But what we're also paying attention to are what is like really sticky, like what is really fun for players, and then those are things that can stay around, potentially be part of the Eternal Realm. And so that's something like season 2 is bringing the 5 additional bosses, but we believe that those bosses will probably stay with us and stay in the Eternal Realm and continue on. And so we don't see the seasons as really like this big testing bed, but we are doing is that as we do the seasons, we are looking at what's working and what isn't, and we're responding to that, but also looking at like, oh, maybe we should make this a permanent part of the game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is season two going to be similar in terms of content scope and playtime to season 1? Is that what we can expect from future seasons as well?
Again, I don't think there's really a fixed template to mm-hmm. like how we're approaching the seasons. I think it really all starts with a strong idea, strong theme that we can then apply to the story. Like, we want to continue to tell fun and interesting stories within Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. But then mechanics, right? Like, how can we turn an idea into like a new mechanic or a new way to kind of approach the power fantasy for your character class?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really kind of the underlying way we approach the seasons.
All right.
Yeah, and season 1 was a season that was being developed while we were launching the game. So. Mm-hmm. We actually basically launched season 1 without really much ability to respond to feedback because it was pretty much already developed. We did some things based on the preseason, mm-hmm. but And so now when we see season one, much like the launch of the game itself, is sort of this foundation upon which to build. And so, you know, season two now has had the knowledge of the preseason and season one. So we're able to do things like the five additional bosses, the way that we're transferring all of your renown now, not just the Altars of Lilith, not just the map, but all of your renown is going to get carried over into season two. And so it's things like that where we're continuing to build on top of those things. And so, like, we don't have a set template for what is a season. We're just looking at, like, what are fun things to do that are interesting for the players.
Mm-hmm. Actually, isn't that super hard with a game like Diablo 4? I mean, it caters to so many different audiences. You got new people who just got into Diablo with the fourth installment. You got, of course, the old Diablo veterans or people who are really, you know, hardcore into the game, right, want to reach level 100 as fast as possible. And then maybe because it's a live service game, you have the MMO community who wants to do things with friends, who expects like guild features and raids. Isn't it super hard to prioritize which group to cater to first, or which one of those is the most important one?
Well, I mean, they're all important, right? And yeah, it's a balance. You know, that's one of the things why you see our seasons. You know, you look at a Diablo 3 season as an example. They've been with us now for 29 seasons, or up to 28 seasons, about to be 29. And those are tend to be more of the ARPG core. And so you can do a season by changing some numbers and making something a little bit more powerful, and you know, the kinds of things that you could do with D3. But now with D4, because we have those different types of players, we want to have that narrative construct. We want to have that quest line, the one we have with, you know, currently with Corman or in season two with Eris, to be able to take you through and guide you through kind of the seasonal mechanic and to learn it. And so you're right, like, we have to look at, that's been one of the challenges for the season and for the game itself, is that we want to be broadly approachable across all those types of players. And so trying to make sure we deliver on all those has definitely been a balance.
Right. Okay. Would you say that looking at future content that we might, or that we could expect more MMO-style features for Diablo 4, like we see in Diablo Immortal, perhaps, you know, like group-based challenges, more guild features, raids maybe, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, again, just, you know, nothing to announce today, you know, outside of what we've already mentioned for Season 2. But over time, you know, certainly, like, nothing's off the table, right? We're always looking at how we can build on the foundation that we have today.
So it's not unimaginable, let's
say. Exactly.
Okay, very cool. Are you planning more high-level content, you know, real high-level content, for example, like adding a fifth world tier?
It's another great question. Like, we can have to say we have nothing to talk about right now.
We could wink.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, blink once if yes, blink twice
exactly,
if no. You know, again, like, we're very, very focused on being responsive to the players and making the best game we can. And so that's how we think about it. You know, the part of the mission of Blizzard is always about player joy. And so everything we're doing, we're trying to make a better and better game. And so if we need to do those types of things to make our game better as we go, then those are the things we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the Butcher, because there's no interview that can't mention the Butcher. It's actually one of the most praised features of Diablo 4, one of the most talked about features in social media. What other surprise one-shot bosses or maybe events are we going to see in the future? Are we going to see more of those?
I go back to your word surprise. I think the only way it's a surprise is if we don't tell you about it ahead of time.
Tell me all the surprises.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a surprise if we let you know what's coming.
I don't like to be surprised. Not by the Butchers.
But our blog has numbers, right, Chris, in terms of, like, how many kills the Butcher has? And
yeah, I believe he's slain, and my numbers might be off, but my memory serves is, like, 30 million players have been taken out by the Butcher. So, yeah, he's doing his job.
Okay, so every of the 12 million players has been slain, like, two times.
Yeah, two or three times.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, those poor souls. But actually, from a design philosophy standpoint, do you think that surprises like these could also serve in seasoning, I love the word, the open world of Diablo 4, like putting more of those in there, more random things that might happen?
I mean, to Rod's point, right, we don't want to, you know, ruin surprises by saying too much today, but, you know, it's always something that we're looking at. Any feature that is, like, you know, we're seeing success and players are happy with, like, you know, we're always obviously going to look for future opportunities to do more of that, right?
Yeah. And there's lots of iconic Diablo characters remaining that could pop up. Maybe, yeah,
sure. But you're always looking for, I mean, as you well know, like, we're always, you have to have the conversation about what about your game is streamable, what about your game is social media notable. Mm-hmm. And so that was the same thing we saw with The Butcher, was that people very quickly started putting clips out of their being ambushed by The Butcher and that kind of stuff, or how they took him down. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yeah, that's something that, as a, you know, a game creator, you have to think about it. Like, what about this is going to be interesting beyond the game that's viewable? And so, yeah, this, those are things we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking into any other ways to make the open world of Diablo 4 more interesting for players?
Nothing to announce today, but, you know, again, I think that, you know, over time we are going to be, like, continuing to add more and more to the open world. Mm-hmm. Just nothing is off the table. You know, we're going to just, you know, continue to add to what we have today.
Yeah, Chris made a great point earlier, which is, like, as a live service, we think of the game as always evolving. Mm-hmm. And so whether that's evolving in the end game, evolving in the open world, evolving in our skills, evolving in our boss monsters, like, all this stuff is things that we're looking at as we continue. Again, we're going to be working on Diablo 4 for a lot of years, so we're always going to be looking at how to evolve to make it a better game for the players.
Mm-hmm. Actually, around seasons, you answered that one a little bit already, but around seasons there seem to be two camps right now of different player types. You got the MMO players who want to stick to one character, you know, on the Eternal Realm and want forever to play their sorcerer, like myself.
Sure, sure.
And then there's the other ones who create a new hero or new character every seasons.
Right.
Are there any plans, or how do you plan to bring both together and maybe make the Eternal Realm more appealing in the future?
I mean, I think as part of it is, like, what we talked about, we're bringing some of the features that we have for seasonal, like the 5 end game bosses, are coming to the Eternal Realm, so we mm-hmm. want to make sure the Eternal Realm is still a fun place to play. We know that some people want to be able to just have their character there, especially with all the seasonal characters essentially retiring to the Eternal Realm. You want to have something to do with those characters. Mm-hmm. So even your new character in Season 1 will ultimately become an Eternal Realm character, and you want to be able to continue playing it. So we're always looking for ways to do that, but we think that idea of that reset where you get to play with your friends back at a level 1, get to experience that sort of the level progression in a whole new way because you have new powers and new challenges is really a part of the fun cycle of Diablo, and mm-hmm. it gives you a good chance to try new classes. I know a lot of us are sort of saying, like, oh, this is my Eternal Realm class, but this will be my Season 1 class, and this will be my Season 2 class. And so that you want to go and experiment with different classes during different seasons, and that's part of that fun, because Diablo at the end is really about progression, and going back and feeling that progression all the time is something that I think is why Diablo 3 was so successful, mm-hmm. and going to, you know, 28 now, 29 seasons, is that feeling of going back and having that fun progression.
Yeah.
And then going back to the 5 bosses that we're going to be adding, what I like about the approach is, you know, from level 50 to 100, a lot of the end game mm-hmm. you know, phase of play, like, that's where, you know, for some people it's feeling like, okay, there's Uber Lilith, you know, level 100, but, like, up until that point, like, what are the things that I can do? There's Helltide and, you know, Nightmare Dungeons and so forth, but this kind of adds another, you know, challenge, another milestone along the way to test your character, you know, and your build.
Right.
So we're going to have those bosses kind of spaced and leveled appropriately to kind of challenge yourself as you work your way towards, you know, 100.
Mm-hmm. Actually, thinking back to Diablo 3, in Diablo 3 it was more or less possible to grind endlessly because the Paragon system wasn't kept. You know,
and it will be in season 29. So that's
So how do you handle that in Diablo 4? Maybe with players who come from Diablo 3 with the expectations of being able to level endlessly, so to say, and then they are capped at 100.
Yeah, that's part of the discussion as we go from season to season. But mm-hmm. right now there is a cap in terms of the level and the progression you do, and that's one of the reasons why I really like the alternate characters, having alts and being able to start new characters to do new progression. But mm-hmm. and that's again a great reason to have a new season. Be like, okay, I know what this felt like to take this character from 1 to 100 and accomplish a bunch of things using Malignant Hearts as the way that I get additional power. So now when I go to season 2 and now I've got vampire powers and I'm using them, you know, as a Daywalker, how does that feel to go through that progression? How would I do it differently, and how would I play with my friends and mm-hmm. and what have you, and take on the new bosses and such? So yeah, I think it's something we're always talking about, is like, how do you feed that feeling of progression? But we're happy with where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. Is it important to slow down progression as well? Because I think that was one of the reasons behind, what was the number, patch 110, I guess it was?
Yeah, it's about balance, not slowing. Mm-hmm. We don't want to slow people. Like, it's not about how do we hold people back. You know, the notion is we want every build to be viable. We want to have a diversity of ways of playing. Like when you start to see things like there's only one way to play the rogue, there's only one way to play a necromancer, then we go like, oh, there's probably a balance issue there. And so it's not about slowing. In fact, by increasing monster density, which we just did recently, mm-hmm. that actually speeds people up. You know, and if you look at our season blessings, we have the Urn of Experience where you can actually get up to another 8% additional experience as you play. And so mm-hmm. we're finding ways actually to help people kind of speed up in some ways as they're playing through that progression. So, yeah, it's just that we're trying to make sure that the challenges feel like challenges and that you're not just blowing through it all the time.
Yeah. Balancing hack and slay sounds like a very hard job to do.
Well, you want people to feel like it's riding the power curve, right? Because mm-hmm. there's if you that notion of you want to feel, there are times when you want to feel overpowered and you feel like you're the king of the world and you can kill anything.
Exactly.
And then there are times where you want to feel challenged and scared and be running away from the butcher and you want to have to earn it and fight a hard challenge. And so mm-hmm. you kind of have to fluctuate between these two things, that feeling of being overpowered and that feeling of having to work for it. And so, yeah, it's definitely a balance challenge. And I'm glad we have a super smart team back home who are working on that challenge.
But even back to what, like, one of the things that Rod touched on was, like, player agency, right? We don't want it to feel like there's only one meta, one way to play, you know, your class. And so I think that was really fundamental, is like, how do we make sure that all of the different builds are viable? And like, if I want to really lean into a specific, like, you know, skill tree, or part of the skill tree, I should say, like, it still feels like it works, mm-hmm. right? So,
yeah. I mean, I could totally feel the challenge you got there when you changed level scaling, how level scaling works in the game with monsters trailing behind you between levels 76 and 81. I'm not totally sure on the numbers, forgive me for that. But yeah, that was changed because the community maybe gave the feedback that they were maybe didn't feel their power, you know, the power, they couldn't live the power fantasy maybe in
right.
exactly those level span. How exactly do you implement changes based on community feedback? How much do you look into the forums, and how do you decide which feedback to use for patches and which to discard maybe?
I think the feedback comes from a variety of sources, right? Mm-hmm. We look at, you know, player data and like telemetry that we get in the back end. So that's really powerful,
that's really
right?
Exciting, I guess.
Because you're able to see like exactly like where are people dying, where are their like, you know, friction points.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition, you know, obviously we pay attention to the community and things that are coming through and some of the more emergent themes and, you know, pain points. As we kind of take stock of that, we obviously look at that in conjunction with the data. Things we're noticing ourselves as players, you know, mm-hmm. the team is, you know, we all play the game ourselves as well. So, you know, it's then, you know, coming upon us to then like prioritize that and figure out, okay, well, when can we address these things? What's the right priority to go after it? And with seasons, it affords us the ability to like to tackle these things. We also have patches, maintenance and balance patches that occur in between the seasons. And so a lot of moments where we can kind of continue to refine and evolve the mm-hmm. game.
Wow. I think telemetry is a very exciting topic. I didn't have that in my list of questions, but I know from experience with YouTube, Twitch and co that there is always surprises in there. Is there anything that comes to your mind that surprised you very much when looking at telemetry from Diablo 4? Mm-hmm. Everything.
there's nothing that, you know, I feel like I can talk to you today. I don't know.
I can't come up with it. It was just really informative about how we think about, again, when you're knowing about, we do things like how, like a rate of kill rate, like how many kills per second or per minute. And mm-hmm. I think about like what the expectations are for the team about how many people should get to a certain place in a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So getting all that information, because sometimes things, if you're by yourself and you're playing in your room, you feel a certain way, but that may not actually be what's happening. And that's why it's always great to get both sort of the, what we say, the quantitative, the data side, mm-hmm. as well as the qualitative, that talking to them. And so whether that's listening to them on X or on Reddit, or it's actually, we do surveys and we'll go out and say, hey, we notice you're this type of player. Talk to us about that. What is that? Why are you playing that way? Or what is it, you know, what's going on? And so we're able to take both the quantitative and the qualitative and sort of, and then we sort of look at like what's short term, what's medium and what's long term in terms of responsiveness. And so things that are short term, you know, we can react very quickly. We added a fifth stash tab as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that are medium would be like, oh, we're taking the gem system and we're making them into a material so they don't take up inventory space, right? And then as we look at longer term, it's things like the bosses that we're adding. Those took another season to go from, we had to wait till season two to implement it. Or even season three for leaderboards. Like we know, you know, launching the game, like leaderboards are important to the Diablo audience, right? Mm-hmm. But we wanted to make sure we were getting it right, and we wanted to make sure that we had our hands around the balance, because one thing that leaderboards really make apparent is like, oh, this mm-hmm. one build, this is the ultimate build to play because it's number one on every leaderboard or whatever, right? And so we needed some time to stabilize the game, and we needed some time to, you know, make sure we were designing the leaderboards right. And so we feel really good going into season three. We're talking about season three. We're not even into that halfway through season one. But, you know, it's that kind of notion, right? That where you know that the game's evolving and we're going to constantly improve it.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm writing down season three now. No, we knew that was going to happen every 3 months. Actually, you talked about classes before. And Diablo series has had some interesting ideas for classes that were never fully explored. Like, I remember the unfinished bard from Diablo Hellfire from the add-on back in the day, which people data mined out of the thing. Right. And I don't know what classes would you like to see personally to be added into the game.
Well, it's kind of cheating because I kind of know what all our roadmap is, so it's sort of hard to say like what I know.
You have to say others, and then your team back home sees you talk about those. What is he talking about?
No, but I think one of the things that sort of what I really loved about when we added the Blood Knight to Immortal, it was that it was a new class. You know, when we were making the five classes for Diablo 4, we knew that, like, we're going from 11 years from, say, Diablo 3 to Diablo 4, that we had to have a mixture of homage to the past, what people love, as well as some twists, you know, for the future. And so that was sort of the same way we approached classes. You know, the rogue is a little bit assassin, a little bit of Amazon, a little bit of demon hunter, and you get the rogue, right? So there's a lot of kind of winks to the past. And I think, I don't know, what would excite me is just having, much like the Blood Knight, is just having something wholly new again.
Mm-hmm. So what, not talking about specifics, I know, but what kind of philosophy does the team have when choosing a new class? How should it fit in there, you know?
It's play style. Like, that's when we're not designers, so it's hard. I don't want to speak for the design team, but I would say, like, I know when we talk about the five classes, it was really about understanding, again, not only, like, fan favorites and that homage to the past, but also it's like, what are the kind of dominant play styles? It's like, oh, there's a long-range play style. That's why you have sort of the archery side of the rogue. There's also agility-based melee, which is the dagger side of the rogue, mm-hmm. right? And then you have companion builds, and you have this transformation builds, and magic builds. And so you sort of look at sort of what are the different play styles and how do people want to experience it? Mm-hmm. And that's, they put a lot of thought into that. And then when you look across the matrix, you're like, what are we missing? What style do we not have yet? And so we sort of look into those areas.
Ah, okay. Sounds exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing what you're going to do there. And actually, this is already my last topic I would like to talk to you about. There are around 200 affixes which can roll on items right now in the game. But if I have no idea which ones will help me to get better, what can I do? How can you help me?
I think that's the beauty of the game, is that you can try things out, right? You can change, you know, your play style. You don't have to stay with something which you've mm-hmm. started, right? So I know for myself, when I first started out with the Necromancer for season one, you know, at first I started going down, like, you know, corpse tendrils and trying, like, you know, builds around that, and then I later went to, you know, more of like bone, you know, some of the bone skills mm-hmm. and so forth. So it kind of affords you that flexibility to test things out, try it, see what feels good for you as a player. And then, you know, you kind of pivot accordingly. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that there's only, like, one way, or that you're kind of, like, pushed into playing certain ways. You can try all of it.
Yeah, I think for a new player, there's a lot of resources out there. And so it's great. There's, like, a lot of great sites that have guides that will help you and say, like, because I think there's a difference between whether you're playing for fun or whether you're optimizing, you know. Mm. And so if you're playing for fun, there, like, a lot of my Necromancer that I started, I chose not to do a meta build. I wasn't going to follow any guide. I just wanted to go make a Thorns Necromancer, and I made it myself, and I didn't go look anything up, and I just had fun. But I knew that it was going to be, it might have a ceiling on it, because I wasn't necessarily maximizing mm-hmm. or min-maxing mm-hmm. like RPG players like to do. So what I suggest for new players is, like, chase the fun initially. Like, you have a lot of time, you know, because really, it doesn't really, things aren't really starting to be permanent-ish until you get to Tier 4. Like, until you get to World Tier 4, you're going to change your weapon, you're going to change your gloves, you're going to change your helmet. Like, everything is very fluid, so don't get too attached to it. You just optimize for the moment and, like, what and what's fun for you. And then as you go, once you get to Tier 4, then you're like, oh, I got an Ancestral. I might actually hold on to this for a while. Maybe then I'll start to care and look for particular affixes on it. But I do have a couple that I always look for. On pants, I always look for more potion slots. So, like, I've got 12 right now. I'm my druid, he's 12 of 12. And on boots, I always go for more max evade slots. So I get like 3 evades without having to do cooldown. So those are the two I'd always recommend. Potions on pants and evade slots on boots.
But what's interesting is, like, you can get a unique or something that ultimately, like, it can completely change your perspective on how you build your character. Right?
Oh yeah, no, that's exactly what, like, my Necro Thorns build, like, with a razor plate, which is a unique chest plate that gives all this, you know, thousands of thorns. Like, my build wouldn't be my build without that unique. And so we know that people want to chase after these sort of build-defining, you know, pieces of gear. So that's why we're really excited to bring those 5 bosses again in Season 2, because now you can go, like, oh, I'm looking for Razorblade, or I'm looking for, you know, Tempest Roar, and then I can go and target that on those bosses.
And I think the advice you just gave is one I gave to players as well. Have fun with the game.
Yes.
You know, don't try from the start to min-max things and go for the most efficient build. I know that I myself am a very efficient player going into the high levels, because that's how hack and slay players are.
Right.
We want to be efficient in monster slaying. That's our job.
Right.
But until you get there, just play around. It's like I played my sorcerer. I played a fire sorcerer.
Yeah.
Just for funsies. You know, just let's see what items drop. I don't know. I just want to use fire. Sure. Let's see where it gets me.
Yeah, because you're not really, you know, up those first 50 levels should just be totally fun. Like, you should, there's no pressure in the first 50 levels. And it's only when you're like, oh, now I have specific things. I have to go after this capstone dungeon, or I'm trying to accomplish to a certain level in Nightmare. Maybe then you need to start pushing a little bit. But those first 50 levels, you're going to be trading your equipment in and out all the time. So just relax and make the power fantasy you want. Everybody has that, like, oh, I want to be an ice sorcerer, or I want to be a werebear druid, or I want to be this spinning whirlwind barbarian. Like, lean into that and have fun with it, and worry about the min-maxing of your affixes later.
Right. Rod, Chris, thank you very much for this interview. It was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.